Next, I'd like to call Tony Rogers, Senior Vice President of the Greater Harlem Chamber of Commerce.
Thank you. And thank you very much. I'd like to thank my good friend, Councilwoman Brewer, for inviting me here. And I'm here to kind of talk about some of the things that we've been working on for many years. In 1994, as urban policy advisor for Dr. Yolanda Moses from the City College of New York, I created a number of programs, two that are important for this particular conversation is the Harlem Partnership Center and the City College Adult and Continuing Education Program. Both were focused on developing ways to provide technology opportunities for individuals and businesses in Upper Manhattan. I coined a phrase, which is probably not mine, but I claim it anyway, that in the year 2000, the 21st century, actually, the lack of information technology in use would probably be the greatest form of discrimination that we might find, no matter who you may be. I would like to say now that based on some of the things that we've accomplished, the ACE program has trained at least 40,000 people in information technology. We have worked with NYCHA. We have 19 centers that we provided through a HUD grant computer training for. One of the things that was mentioned before, speaking on my chamber hat, access is very important, and small businesses, of course, would like to have access but might not have the time to do that. Through the Partnership Center and City College, we provide funds for trainees to go in and help with that type of activity. The last thing, Bridges for Success is a program that now we're exploring to put computers in the homes of people. Working with HRA and the Councilwoman Inez Dickens' office, we're looking at ways to explore funding that is untapped, coming from the federal government, that can put computers into families. There may be soon a pilot putting 100 computers in homes in Central Harlem. It's a prototype that follows a program in Yonkers. A group by the name of CoreStar put that together using video streaming workforce development process to help families. And that money sometimes is given back, so we're looking at that as an opportunity because no matter what you say, there are some families who can't afford computers, not even broadband. So these are the things that we're looking for, ways to begin to embellish on some of the things that we've been doing for the last 20-some-odd years.
Thank you, sir. Questions for Mr. Rogers.
Yes. You mentioned that there are families that cannot afford computers. You also mentioned that you have 19 centers that have can you explain how important these centers are in a community that people have difficulty in even getting their own computer to provide the services?
Well, it's very important. As I indicated, we have 19 centers throughout the city, four in Harlem. What we found when we developed the Harlem Partnership Center, which started in the Minnesink Townhouse, and then we have an office now in Harlem, that a computer is a family. It brings families together by creating training, which is why this program, Bridges to Success, is kind of important for two reasons. One, when a computer is in a house, not only young people, but the whole family, especially in workforce development. With workforce development using streaming, we might be able to find ways for the individuals to have jobs in order to do that. From the chamber, there are businesses, computer-based businesses. You can have an international business with $300 if you understand how to use that facility. So there are many ways to bridge that gap, and it's extremely important. We started using information technology, again, in Minnesink, and we found that we had a lot of elderly women, grandmothers coming in, and the reason for that is that they were taking care of their kids, and the kids were coming home with disk or information on computers, and they didn't know how to do that, so they would start to come in and learn. In that experience, there was an elderly man. He was 80 years old, but he could not read. But we were working with him with a computer program that basically was for a third grade level reading phonics. And he had a good time doing it, and he would tell his friends that he was studying the computer, but he was really doing something that he would have never done if that opportunity was not there. So there are many stories that can be told as to why and how it's important. And as I said before, without this help, without this type of technology, no matter who you are, rich or poor, no matter what, one story, I used to live in Riverdale, and when the Easy Pass system came about, I was able to have one. I had a beat-up Volvo. I was driving down, and there were a line of limos and cars that could not get past. And I zoomed past. That's when I realized that no matter who you are, if you're not involved with this technology, you're going to be discriminated against. So I applaud you. Thank you again, Gail, for having me here. And if there are any questions, I'll be glad to answer.
Wendy?
I'd love to hear a little bit more about the Bridges for Success program. Is that the
right Bridges for Success program. There's a group by the name of CoreStor. They actually developed video streaming as an adult training program, which has been adopted by the State Department of Education. In Yonkers, there's a program that they use as a pilot, and I think there's also a similar one in Florida, where a collaboration between city, state, and federal government training funds using food stamp funds and the like have been used to provide funding to put computers into homes of individuals for about 6 months. If they pass all of the courses, they can keep those computers. They came to me to ask whether or not I could work within the city government to see whether or not that partnership between the city, state, and federal government could also be used in order to apply for this particular program. We're looking to develop this model in Councilwoman Inez Dickens' office, district, to put 100 computers there. We're meeting with HRA on the 18th, which to begin to explore these possibilities. The thing that really got me fired up about this is that I was told that in many cases this money is given back because it's not this collaboration between city, state, and federal government does not work all the time because it's a bureaucracy. So we're trying to look at that to see whether or not we can solve that problem, because it would be a shame not to be able to do this. And obviously, if we can solve that problem, it could become not only a city, state, but it could be a national program. So I'm going to call my good friend Gail. We talked many years ago. I used to think a website was where Spider-Man hung out, but then I realized that that's not the case. So, and I still do. I talk a good talk, but my daughter, who's four, always shows she knows more than I do. But I have insight. Sometimes that's a lonely place to be. But nevertheless, I'm trying not to take up so much time.
Thank you for your comments. I take it from some of the examples that you've given that your constituency is more than just business.
Yes.
Community resource. And I'd be very appreciative, without doing a lot of work, if you had any statistics on the people and groups within your area that have come to you and asked about computers and the internet, because I think one of the things everybody's looking at is where are the niches where we are failing to provide service.
Well, again, I'm an advisor to a program that I created, the City College Adult and Continuing Education Program, and that would be one of the best ways, because we have statistics there, and I would be glad to provide them. But one of the things that happened is when we started talking about this program as the model, many people didn't think that that was going to be something that people would be interested in. I'm also the founder of a program called Harlem Week, and we used Harlem Week to develop a questionnaire to look to see what people were interested in. And the top, and this was in 1995, and one of the top areas was information technology, and that's how we were able to start to do that. So there are statistics that I'll be glad to do Councilwoman's office, or my card is there to give you information. CCNY, the Adult and Continuing Education, you can actually go online and find them. But yes, my constituency is pretty broad because broadband is something that affects all of us. You don't have to necessarily be poor or rich to be affected by this. You just have to be ignorant.
Councilmember James.
Thank you. And thank you for your time.
Councilmember
Brewer. That's okay. We work together, James and Brewer. Tony Rogers mentioned that the wonderful Councilmember Inez Dickens, I know she has a representative here today. She may not be able to join us, but we're in her. He did, yeah. But we're in her district. Thank you very much.
Thank you. I'd like to call Lewis Kleppner, Executive Director of GatewayToGov.org.
Hi. First of all, thank you for the opportunity to address this committee and provide some insight. For the past 10 years, I've worked as an interactive designer, developer, and producer at this point. And as we've all become aware, the U.S. has fallen significantly behind in among our other advanced economies, countries, in terms of broadband penetration and ultimately broadband speeds available. New York City being the largest city in the United States, one would hope would provide the opportunity to innovate with high bandwidth applications. High bandwidth applications, I mean high resolution video conferencing, effective work from home capabilities, meaningful VPN, virtual private network access, remote file transfers. Right now I spend about 50% of my time working from home, doing media development work and moving files back and forth between my residential cable connection and my various clients. Typically they have a T1 office connection. Is slow and cumbersome, and we oftentimes resort to having messengers carry DVDs back and forth. Obviously, that's not the most productive way of working and stifles certain innovations and opportunities that higher bandwidth networks would provide. There's some hope. Let me skip directly to, I guess, a question I'd like to put out there. I wonder about the feasibility of having a last-mile community fiber network where from homes and businesses, all fiber connections terminate back to a common peering point. Speaking a little bit outside my area of expertise here, but it's my area of strong interest because I feel constrained by the current bandwidth, you know, current broadband availability in the city. Ottawa, Canadian City has a project underway and a presentation, a PowerPoint file that I'll post to the blog, which is the committee's website, where they propose a common last mile fiber solution. And back at this common peering point, the end user has some basic net connectivity that's available and the option to peer on a citywide basis. So, say, gigabit access from one office to another might be facilitated, whereas that company might only have 10 megabits of access to the public internet. So I wonder about what city resources are available. The MTA has dark fiber in their subway system. I've heard about iNet, or institutional network. I've been unable to find maps or any lists of these city resources that might be available. So I'd hope to see those in the near future.
Thank you. Questions or perhaps answers for Mr. Kleppner?
I have a question because I hate to have you disappear without answering something more. When you are working from home and trying to connect with work, I think that the only way that I've heard is when there's a group called NYSERNET, which has been, as you probably know, connecting cultural and nonprofit institutions, and it is really, you know, research institutions desperately need not just DVDs, but major research projects to go back and forth. Is that the kind of fast track that you would like? Go ahead.
Yes, fiber level access and the ability to between, I think there's an opportunity to spur local innovation between different professional service bureaus and organizations based in New York City by providing ultra high speed access between their various offices. Messaging DVDs back and forth is, you know, we could use carrier pigeons and accomplish the same thing. This is the only map I've been able to find of this is NYSERS net in New York City. It would be nice to have a compilation of all the city resources.
Very soon you might be able to get one. Okay. Just a little hint.
That would be great. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next speaker Mr. Salzberger actually began an introduction a short while ago. Veni Markovsky, chairman of the Internet Society of Bulgaria and board member of the Internet Society of New York.
Hi. Hello. Before I begin, I just wanted to ask whether we have Thomas Duny?
He's here.
Okay. That's good. And Howard Shafak?
Mr. Shafak is here. Yeah.
Good.
He was here.
Okay.
He's not here.
So anymore. I have to be careful what I'm saying about those two companies so that my internet doesn't get stopped. I have an experience of being a recent.
We will not pull the plug.
Well, you know, technical problems. Technical problems happen. I came to New York 2.5 years ago, and from Bulgaria, and I faced the digital divide at its worst. The digital divide, usually people talk about it with relations to countries in Africa or underdeveloped regions of South America or Asia. And for me, this was a big shock. Actually, one of the biggest. I even blogged about it. The digital divide was that I came from a city which provided me at my home a 100 megabit connection, which was upgraded to a 1,000 megabit, 1 gigabit connection. And I had to use now, and I'm still using a cable connection, which is at like 20 times less bandwidth. So when I started to go to the public hearings of Gail Brewer's committee, and then she came to the Internet Society of New York for one of our public meetings, and we were talking, and this seemed like something which should have been done actually a long time ago, to allow the citizens of the city to have faster, affordable access to the internet. This, however, has still not happened. We still are limited to a choice basically between two companies or two providers. And yes, it was mentioned that in Sofia, in the capital of Bulgaria, you can basically pull a plug across any street or under any street using the existing infrastructure of the municipality, paying some rent if necessary, if there is an owner of the infrastructure. And you can provide the users with much higher internet access. What happened as a result of this liberalization of the market, and it's mentioned in this nice report prepared by the committee in Europe, what happened is that there is great competition. At the moment in the capital, which is 1.2 million people in Bulgaria, there are about hundreds of internet service providers. So I can continue, but I see there is lack of time. So I can send an email to anyone who wants to achieve information more about that, because I already wrote it in English. The basic line is allow competition so that the companies can actually provide the internet access at affordable prices, because it's also too expensive. It's ridiculously expensive, in effect. So I'm ready to answer questions if you have. I could talk for hours on that.
Thank you, and we would welcome information that you could provide to the committee. Are there any questions for Mr. Markovsky?
I know. A couple of presenters already have been alluded to an alternative fiber connectivity to be provided as a means to address broadband. Now, can you, in your experience, tell me how this connectivity or what is being proposed addresses the needs of those areas that are traditionally underserved? Because usually when we see these alternative systems, they only concentrate in areas where there's already competition and not in the areas where there's no connectivity. Can you relate to how in the experience that you have,
right,
how this connectivity, this mammoth connectivity, has gotten to the most needed areas.
Well, almost 7 years ago, we started by providing the Wi-Fi internet access, which is at the moment the most popular like Wi-Fi spots, by using special antennas and just sending the signal for longer distances. Today, there is WiMAX, and you've mentioned in the report there is a mentioning of WiMAX. WiMAX allows, it's a new technology, relatively new, it allows much higher speed at much longer distances, which can serve the underdeveloped communities. And it is a big issue also with the incumbent, the telecom operator, in not only in Bulgaria, but in every European country, which by law is obliged to provide internet access to every customer. So it costs a lot of money to have the telephone line to be 100%, you know, 24/7 working. It's much easier to do it through the wireless connection.
But wireless, WiMAX cost. It's not cost-free.
It's not cost-free, but it's less cheaper than using the standard copper line. We're not talking about fiber optic at all. But New York City, especially the Manhattan area, is great for providing high-speed internet access with fiber optic, which reminds me, I signed up, for, I think, 2 years ago with Verizon to get update when in my neighborhood there will be fiber optic, and I still haven't received anything, which means for 2 years they have not moved into the area about around Union Square, which is a pity.
Andrew? No. Okay. Other questions for Mr. Markovsky? Thank you very much, and we would look forward to receiving your information. I'd now like to call Jacob Morris of the School Leadership Team and Empowerment Alliance. And before Mr. Morris gets to the podium, I would just like to thank all of the speakers for keeping their remarks brief. I note with a gulp and some concern that we are not quite halfway through our witness list. So please, folks, continue that wonderful cooperation, because we do very much want to hear from everybody who's signed up. Mr. Morris.
Thank you. It's great that you're doing this hearing today. The theme I'm going to bring out is diffusion of innovation. I mean, basically, that's what this is, whether you call it broadband or any innovation. It could be the iron plow. How does innovation move through society? And it's not just the technology, and that's what everyone here in our society, on the panel and in our society, is dealing with. The focus of the organization that I'm representing today grows out of some workshops that I've personally given in Brooklyn and in Manhattan, in particular, for parents in schools. And also for the Fortune Society, for ex-convicts. One is called Education Navigation, and the other is called How to Save and Make Money by Buying and Selling on Amazon. It helps to have broadband. To have broadband and to use it, several speakers have brought out, gee, you need a computer. If you're low income, what are the ingredients of the digital divide? So you look at social mechanisms, and when I speak with parents or ex-convicts who are trying to reintegrate into society, and they make trade-offs, what I call micro decisions, about, I can only afford a dial-up connection. And I ask them, well, what's the cost of your time? So the speed and multiple, you know, whether it's 10 times faster or 50 times faster, you know, there's a real value there, and there's trade-offs. And we make these trade-offs all through our lives. What we're calling for, I'd like the panel to really consider this, as well as the leaders from our elected officials, is for school leadership teams right now are a critical part of the school governance structure, theoretically, and parents are 50% of the school leadership teams. We're calling for legislation that would provide for the school leadership teams to take responsibility for the uploading of content to school websites. And now the Board of Education, this really isn't well known, has just launched a new initiative called Dynamic Portals. And Dynamic Portals, there's not that many that are really up and running. But if school leadership teams were given the responsibility to put content on school websites, they would be a lot more interesting to parents. We're also calling for much better school computer recycling programs for low-income parents so that they could have computers even now.
Okay, we're going to have to call it there, Mr. Morris. Thank you. Are there questions for Mr. Morris? Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you.
I'd now like to call Professor Tim Wu at the Columbia Law School.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for taking the time to listen to these issues and particularly inviting me to testify. First, I just want to say up front, I don't represent any parties other than myself. I'm not paid by any of the telecom firms. My interest in this and my background is through studying the history of these problems and being involved in a lot of the issues and also working in the industry. What I want to say today, I just want to make two points. I want to first of all emphasize, and I think this has probably been said a lot by your witnesses, just the comparative importance of this project you're undertaking. You know, New York is one of the leading cities in the world, will continue to be so, but there is a future whereby the cities with the best infrastructure will be the cities that win. And I just want to emphasize that how important this project is to the economy of the city, to the culture of the city, and so forth. But now I want to talk about my second main point, which is I want to emphasize in my remarks that there, despite what you may hear, there is no free lunch in what you're trying to do here. You are taking on a worthy and a very difficult challenge. You know, people may say, well, this technology will solve anything and that technology may solve anything. I actually don't believe that. I'm a professor of technologies, but on the other hand, in some ways, I'm a Luddite. I believe this challenge is as old and as fundamental as the same challenge the city has faced with electricity, the same with sewage in the 19th century, with the canals and other times. These are the same basic challenges of infrastructure that city councils are designed to address. And anyone who tells you that you can easily, any company or any advocate who tells you, you know, you just wave a magic wand and free internet access happens, is not telling you the truth. I've been studying the problems with Muni Wi-Fi systems, and despite the fact that I support those systems, I want to emphasize that this idea that you just, you know, wave a magic wand and you get free internet access in poor neighborhoods, it doesn't happen that way. This will take a dedication of resources. This is akin, you know, to building the electric system or akin to the dedication it took to achieve universal service and telephony in the 20th century. And so I just wanted to say that the challenge you've taken is a large one and that I fully support your efforts to make New York once again the world-leading city in this area.
Thank you, sir. Are there questions for Professor Wu? Councilmember Brewer.
Thank you for coming, Tim. The question I have is, I know you have looked at a lot of other municipal wireless systems, and I'm just wondering what some of the challenges are and what you think, how you think New York could approach it differently. Because we aren't Philadelphia, we aren't L.A., but right. It is a challenge to try to figure out what we should be that does address the digital divide and all the other challenges.
Right. I think that the Muni Wi-Fi, I'm a big supporter of the ideas behind the Muni Wi-Fi, but I think there was too much of an idea that you could get everything you wanted for nothing. You know, you just gave out a couple contracts, had private companies who overpromised, build things, and it would all happen for free. One of the things the city may seriously consider, my mind, is to how this city can become a fiber city. If I were, in charge of this project and I was thinking 30 years forward, how does New York become the world's leading fiber city? What does that take? Now, does it take government building out? Like roads, government builds roads. That's one thing the government does. Does it take, certain tax incentives? What does it take to make New York a fiber city? That's what I would aim for, particularly in underserved neighborhoods, to just set a standard that it's like the phone system. Every house in New York gets plumbing, get sewage, and should get fiber, too. And I think aiming for that goal is where I try to go for. But it's not going to be easy. Yeah.
Just ask a question. Let me reverse the question a little bit.
Sure.
If we could step back 10 years, what should we have done?
That's a good question. If I were stepping back 10 years, I would have invested heavily and early in fiber. In fiber, and have said to the companies that run the infrastructure, you know, that particularly the phone companies, but also the cable companies, you make this a fiber city by 2007, or else, or you know, with the traditional carrots and sticks, you build this city out, or we're going to build it out, or somehow have set a goal that we want this city to be a fiber city by this deadline. I think you should look at the history of electricity, the history of sewerage, and the history of telephony to see how that was done. And that's what I would recommend.
Andrew. Hey, Tim. Could you comment on whether or not you think that there's any connection between the amount of money delivered to politicians over the last 20 years from telcos and cable companies and how it may have affected the ability of this marketplace to achieve its goals?
Well, let me take an economic angle on that. You know, simple economics tells you if you don't have to build something, you won't. If you can continue living off what you've built years ago, existing infrastructure, charging exorbitant rates on that kind of infrastructure, and if the people who are going to force you to do your job can be bought off one way or another, then why wouldn't you do that? It's simple economics. I would probably do the same thing if I get away with it.
Other questions for Professor Wu? Thank you, sir.
Thank you so much.
I'd now like to call Karen Gorgi. She is the director of the Computer Center for Visually Impaired People at Baruch College.
Thank you very much, and I'd appreciate it if somebody at the table would speak away from the microphone for 1 second so I know exactly where you are.
Hello, welcome.
Right up here.
Welcome.
You're talking in the mic.
Sorry.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. I am Karen Gorgi. I am the director of the Computer Center for Visually Impaired People at Baruch College, where for the past 30 years we have been providing assistance to people who are blind or visually impaired to use computers. The single most difficult handicap associated with visual loss is the lack of timely and independent access to information, and particularly written information. Digital technology has the potential to make it possible for people who are blind or visually impaired to access information with a level of independence and immediacy never before possible. With what's called assistive technology, which can be either the software that will allow a screen output to be magnified so that people with useful vision can see it better, or screen reading technology, which will allow people like myself to actually hear what the screen output is and to hear what one is doing as one is keying in information. People's ability to use the computers has the possibility to provide a tremendously enhanced level of access to the public arena. There are barriers, however, to this happening, and I am thrilled for the chance to be able to mention a couple of them to this panel and to invite your participation in knocking those barriers down. One barrier is the simple lack of access on websites and on other web interfaces that happens. For example, we have a new emergency system called Notify New York, which was just brought online, I think you probably know better than me, within the last few weeks. It turns out that in order to log into that system, one has to type in a word that is actually a graphic, so no screen reader can read that. I cannot log into that system. And this is in spite of the laws that are on the books that demand that that websites be accessible to people. So we need to have accessibility for people with disabilities not be an afterthought. We need to be working with it at the moment where access is being provided and where these broadband systems are going forward. Secondly, we do need to make sure there is a 70% unemployment rate in the visual impairment community. So having computers at one's disposal is a very difficult and challenging thing for our population, and yet computers and computer training can do a great deal to bridge that employment gap. So
if you
could challenge
wrap it up
us
in the next 30 seconds, please.
I challenge us to invest in computers for this population, and also to invest in the kind of training that's going to be truly accessible training for our group. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for Dr. Gorgi?
I have a quick question. I'm Gail Brewer, City Council.
Yes.
And my question is, when I should know the law. I hope that the city's site, although you just described that Office of Emergency Management needs to definitely change the way that they do their logins, but generally, are government sites accessible? And if not, how do you suggest we go about changing that? Because that's one area where the sites should certainly be accessible.
Right. Government sites, I would say, are partially accessible. And our center is a resource, if I can be so rash. There are resources in the community that can help with that, but it needs to be funded, and it needs to be taken as a priority by the city, by the agencies, by the city council, by this panel. It needs to not be a back burner issue anymore. Number of visually impaired people is growing exponentially with macular degeneration and et cetera. It's going to be a real issue going forward for folks.
Thank you.
Dr. Gorgi, is there a specific broadband-related issue that applies uniquely to the visually impaired community rather than use of digital technologies overall?
The fact that people need to have screen reading technology, speech technology, and large print software to enable us to access systems and access information means that resources are going to be hogged. Time is going to be more of an issue. So for us, dial-up is actually not realistic at this point. So because of the assistive technology that's essential for us, broadband is equally essential.
Thank you. Thank you for your testimony. I would now like to call Michael Lewis, the founder and executive director of Harlem Wireless.
Hello. Thanks, Councilmember Brewer, for holding these hearings. My name is Michael Lewis. I'm the founder and executive director of Wireless Harlem, an innovation and technology organization, and advocacy on these issues in the Harlem community. I wanted to just hopefully add on to what was talked about earlier and sort of take a much more ground level view on some of the issues. Last year, we started a focus group report, and we completed it towards the beginning of this year, a small qualitative study in partnership with Abyssinian Development Corporation, and Victor Millsap is here, who's the vice president and also an advocate on this issue. And what we found, I wanted to just talk about some of the findings, and I thought could have some takeaways from that. We looked at three groups during these focus groups. We talked to Harlem adult residents, 30 to 60 years. We talked to small business owners, and we also talked to young residents, and three different focus groups. And we talked, in particular, we focused on lower free broadband, the issue of dial-up to broadband, and also the extent to which a computer gap exists in Harlem. And go ahead.
You just have a minute left.
Okay, thanks. And I'll just talk about some of the top line findings. For older residents, some of what we found, they said that having more Harlem residents and businesses connected via broadband would create a more cohesive and connected community. Another important finding was that older residents, there was some confusion that exists about the legitimacy of certain computer buying programs that are that you see on TV sometimes late at night, sometimes during shows. For small business owners, a couple of the top line findings. Small business owners in Harlem told us that there's a digital divide, but they attributed it can be attributed in a lot of ways to the fact that there are a lot of older business owners who have lived there for some time, and they may not know much about technology or have adapted technology. But there is interest in more advanced computer training courses, but they found that they needed to be offered during more amenable times. And then finally, for young residents, one key finding that there was a need for more than one computer in the house. There's a sort of a bandwidth constraint on the computer to get on the computer, sometimes four or more. And then also there was a final perception that there was a lock-in to internet, phone, and cable, sort of the three-package service that you get, and it's sort of hard to mentally break out of that to find other options. And that's it.
Thank you, sir. Are there questions for Mr. Lewis?
I have a question. In terms of the businesses, I know that Tony was here with the chamber, but we haven't heard a lot from businesses. And one of my questions is, small business owners, I know the older issue is true in the manufacturing community also. We heard that in Brooklyn. But one of the questions I have is, they don't have a lot of time, you know.
Sure.
And so I know the Verizon has a training center on 125th Street, but in general, how do you think that we could get them training and help them, I think, to, you know, aside from rent, which is always a problem, the notion of having perhaps a site that would help with export importing and just getting more sales. I was just at a store the other day, a small store, and I asked him, and his online has gone from, he's like in a desolate kind of area, he sells gifts, and he said that it had gone from 30% to this year 70% of his holiday is going to be online. I mean, the online thing was just rolling in. And, you know, it's like that he wouldn't survive without it.
Right.
So do you know how many percentage use online at all in Harlem, or did that wasn't part of your focus group?
Well, again, I think for a lot of the, just from what I read, a lot of the, more the owners who have lived in Harlem for a while. I think part of it, though, was some of the training courses that exist don't address, say, what you're talking about, which is e-commerce, building a website with e-commerce functionality. So, and offering those class courses when they can actually attend. They're willing to attend those courses, but taking the time off from, you know, is very difficult. And I just one other thing I'd add, training around some of the programs. I think one person mentioned to us that the what's the software program for small businesses?
QuickBooks
is much more advanced, and it takes a while now to understand a program like that, which can actually help a small business.
Mr. Lewis, are the results of your study available in written form?
Yes, they are.
Would you be able to share those with the committee?
Sure, I'll check with you.
We'd be grateful, sir. Thank you for your testimony today. Whoops, I'm sorry.
Before you run, Mr. Lewis, can you just expand a bit on, you mentioned that many of the small business owners indicated there was a digital divide. So I wanted to kind of understand what is their definition of that divide?
Well, I'll just give you some of the anecdotal evidence. I do believe that for small business owners, a lot of home-based businesses exist, and there's a difficulty in getting 21st century wiring to those buildings. A lot of them have outdated infrastructure. That's on top of what we talked about for just understanding of how to use these programs, e-commerce programs, those types of things. So it's really the divide exists in having difficulty getting businesses wired, especially small and home-based business, which there are a lot of. And part of it is getting somebody to come out, you know, just very much difficulty in getting their businesses wired.
Thank you, sir. Before I call the next speaker, let me just observe that we have 40 minutes and at least 12 people who would still like to speak to the committee. So if I could just redouble my request, please, folks, as brief as you can possibly make it, and colleagues, if we could limit to one, perhaps two questions on each round, that would be terrific. The next speaker is Stanley Gleaton, Executive Director of the West Harlem Assistance Group.
Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Stan. Hi, Gail. My name is Stanley Gleaton. I'm not the executive. I wish I was the executive director. I am director of government and community relations, director of government community relations for West Harlem Group Assistance. And I'm also being joined by Harvey Coleman and Janelle Westbury, who I'd like maybe to come up because they may be able to answer some questions that I may not be able to. One thing I would like to say, and Mr. Lewis, thank you so very much because I think he really brought the point home. We're a community development organization in West Harlem, and we do housing in West and Central Harlem. And part of the issue that we have, one of the problems that we have in the Harlem community is not speed, but really access. And Gail, as you know, I'm former chair of Board 10. And when I was chair of the board, I mean, part of one of the issues that we tried to get access and have computers. We don't even have computer labs in all of our schools. All right, so I just heard Mr. Bell, you had asked about the digital divide, what the issue or what the definition of the digital divide was. And I remember at some point some years ago that the Empowerment Zone had Highway 125, that they were going to be able to institute some of this, what you're talking about today, and the program was scrapped. It was a $25 million program. And I think with that, e-commerce and all the other issues that had been discussed would also have been able to be addressed. So I think besides all of the other issues, there is an element of racism, if I may say, that also goes along with the lack of services that we have in Harlem. One thing I would like to say, that there is a solution. I'm here to, at the urging of Council Member Dickens, that my agency, West Harlem Group Assistance, does have a program. It's a collaboration between HPD, our agency, West Harlem, LISC, One Economy, and it's a program that's administered through the New York Equity Fund. And right now, the program puts computers in all of our new apartments. These are low-income tax credit apartments that we're building. And right now, we have 30 apartments that have been wired with computers. So there is a solution. I want to let you know there is a program. I know Tony Rogers had spoke about a program they're doing, but we actually have been able to institute this program through One Economy and the other entities. So I needed to let you know that we're moving forward in that direction. But again, it needs to be, you know, it definitely needs to be upgraded. So if you'd like to ask me questions or see us later, that we can tell you about this program. The cost. For the 30 apartments that we have, it's a cluster of 4 buildings, and it's 30 apartments, and the cost is approximately $90,000. But each apartment has a computer, and when the tenants leave, they are able to take those computers with them. It's wired and the whole bit. So I just wanted to share that information with the committee.
Thank you, sir. Are there questions for Mr. Gleaton? Mindy?
I'd like to hear more, first of all, how that cost is broken down into the computers, the hardware versus the wiring.
I have a breakdown right here if I can read.
And also, if you can explain how the low-income housing tax credit program works to get computers into the home.
I'm going to need you for this. It's broken down. When you say broken down, it's broken down cable and connector installation, network electronics, access computer hardware and software, website development, and also there's a cost in there also, a two-year training for actually training the residents who may not have, who are not trained to use the computers. So it comes out to about $73,000, and there's some extra cost added on to it, but it comes out to about $90,000.
And how does the low-income housing tax credit actually function, and is this replicable in other areas of New York City?
Harvey, can you answer that? This is Mr. Coleman, who's our director of technology.
The low-income tax credit program, LISC, the local initiative support corporation, they provide. Basically, we work with the city to develop a budget to establish low-income housing in the area of West Harlem. In order to establish that, we have to we act as a developer, and we say we're going to put a certain amount into this particular building, and basically the LISC provides that consulting work to help us to get the low-income tax credits. So based on the, there's a comparison with the market rate pricing, and basically we set up that deal through the local initiative support corporation.
Okay.
I don't know if I made myself clear.
I'm just going to ask a question for clarification. Did I hear you say that not all schools are wired or have computers?
Not all schools, no.
Isn't that part of the franchise for the telephone company and the cable company to provide that?
If it is, it's not completely done yet, sir.
Thank you.
Elizabeth Strzok has the last question.
I'm just curious, with the price point that you've given us of the $90,000 for 30 apartments, that would be about $3,000 per apartment or $3,000 per family. So what of that $3,000 is paying for broadband, just out of curiosity? Because the rest you were saying was hardware, software, web content, and training.
Yeah, the it says here for internet access and network maintenance for 5 years, $25,920.
So of the $90,000, you're saying $25,000 is going to pay for the internet?
For the internet. And that's...
And that's for 1 year?
No, that's 5 years. So every tenant gets 5 years of internet access free. And then afterwards, they have to pay the local internet service provider.
Thank you very much.
Many thanks.
I'm sorry.
Okay. Colleagues, please, quickly.
Besides this project bringing computers to the homes, are there any community-based organizations in your area that are providing or filling the gap in your community to provide access?
Well,
at the present time?
We do. We have five technology centers that we run. In fact, Ms. Westbury runs Paul Register, which is one of our...
How important and how effective these centers have been to provide...
You can speak to that because she runs that program.
Well, they are quite effective. I run the Paul Register Center, and we have not only the after-school programs for the children, but we also have for the adults in the morning. We have for the seniors, and we have been conducting and testing some evening programs for working parents. So... out of our center, I would say we've had for the past year maybe about 200 families.
How many?
200.
200 families.
Mm-hmm. In the area.
Thank you. So it's making a dent.
It is making a dent. And in answer to the question about the wireless in the schools, I just attended a meeting briefly at PS 194, which is an elementary, and they have received a grant from the local, Mr. Rob Jackson? Assemblyman. And still, they have not received their cable connection. They have even had to close the library and the computer center because the wires were causing unsafety for the children. And they, you know, this is something that they really needed to look into. So, yes, there are some places that...
Councilman Jackson.
Councilman she's talking about Robert that. Jackson, right, that provided a grant. But it has not happened yet, and they're still waiting.
I just want to... one additional question, two parts. Can you quickly just sort of describe what the training entails and how many of the 30... of the 30 units, how many of those residents are actually online?
I would say percentage-wise, 90% of the tenants are online, actively using the internet service. Now, some of these tenants decide not to use it for their own, you know, personal reasons, but we provide the access. That's our job. We provide them the access. We provide the training. We provide the services that they need, whether they want to start their own businesses. We have tenants, you know, actually tenants, Mr. Witherspoon, he has his own business, and he has his own website, and he has internet access. He can access his email. So all these services we provide to our tenants, and it's for them to make use of it.
And just on the training piece.
Training, we provide training anywhere from, you know, Microsoft Office applications, you know, Windows. Introduction to computers, Windows, you know, basic training. And we also plan to do, like, hardware, you know, A+, you know, in the more in-depth, you know, training.
As you can see, Mr. Gleaton, you and your colleagues are so interesting that the panel cannot restrict itself to only two questions. But the very last one does go to do it.
Actually, I don't have a question, but I'm with the agency that oversees the city's franchise, and I was wondering if I could just talk to you later about what I understood you to say in terms of lack of wiring in these buildings and the schools, if I could just come down and talk to you afterwards sure. about that. Thanks.
All right. Thank you. Thank you all very much.
I would like to ask three representatives from who are involved with OATS to come up simultaneously, but I'm going to ask that you all observe the same two-minute limit that goes across across the set. I would like to ask Sylvia Schwartz, Diana Sorzano, both of the Jewish Home and Hospital, and Thomas Camber of OATS to come to the microphone, please.
I know we're at loss for time, and while my colleagues are walking up, I'm Sylvia Schwartz. I'm a senior. I'm 80 years old. I retired in 95. I've traveled the world. I've made many friends. I'd like to talk about financially. I have very bad reception because I can't afford cable on my TV. I try to keep up with my friends by using the telephone. Do you know how expensive long distance is? As far as my internet provider, that keeps breaking down, and I have to use the phone with my speaker system, hopefully at night when someone answers, so that something can be fixed. Hopefully, broadband will help clear up all of this so that my quality of life at this point in my life will be better, and I can listen and learn and be a part of the 21st century. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Schwartz.
My name is Diane Sorzano, and I'm a part of the OATS program starting last year, where I met some volunteers from the home health, old age home. We don't want to say old age no more. Involvement, because I'm a part of their program. And there was a gentleman that came in and started teaching me how to use the computer, even though I had training before, but not extensive as he did in direct. It's the OATS program. And I was overwhelmed at how much this man wanted to teach me to do the computer. I'm a senior citizen, or I'm a young person in an old body. and I want to learn. And I want to stop learning because I'm 65 or over and I have to sit down in a chair and read a paper. Well, for one thing, I can't read because I'm partially blind. But my brain is active and I want to use it. I'm a part of this society. I want to be a part of it. And elders can help just like other people. We got a lot of incentives and we want to do our part. We don't want to sit down and do nothing and become vegetables. And I appreciate it if the broadband would help us to get onto the internet without paying $40 and $50 a month, which we can't afford because we're on fixed incomes. They say the mind is a terrible thing to waste. That means if it's young or old. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Ms. Arzano. Mr. Camper?
Good afternoon. Thank you for having us. I just want to very quickly point out, we have several members of the local community here who have been active in helping older adults and senior citizens connect to the internet. Jewish Omen Hospital has actively supported this program for now almost 2 years, both with training programs inside the hospital and also through the at-home project that they're describing here. And we've been providing the training and the programming around that, but they've been very active with it. Councilmember Dickens has funded a program in her district at the Frederick E. Samuel Center, which is on 140th Street. And Carnetta Clark, who is seated in the back and there waving, is the director of that program. It's also co-sponsored there with AARP in NYCHA development. And we've been really honored to help build them a lab there and begin teaching classes. They've had a very active group of seniors who are interested in this issue. I passed out some numbers that we put together from a recent survey of our seniors, which are, I think, help call to attention sort of what people are experiencing who come out and look for these classes. The most important of the numbers is the first one, which is that 46% of the people that we serve live alone. And the computer is their lifeline to meeting other people and connecting to their friends and their family. I guess the other number to call out would be that 75% who take the course say they feel much more connected to friends and family as a result of it. And the other 22% say they feel more connected, but don't say much more. But it's a very important way that we can connect to older individuals, and we just need your help with this. The city currently does not fund, aside from the city council, which has very generously funded us this year, the city itself does not have any programs that are citywide for things like this. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Any questions for Mr. Camber?
I know we're running. I have a quick. First of all, thank you for all your help on this. My question is, what do you think the city should be doing? Funding is one of it, but how could we connect seniors, and what would the broadband do to help to do that? Senior centers, as well as people living at alone.
I mean, the infrastructure is already partly created because people are doing it on the fly. So one is to utilize the senior centers. We just opened two new labs in Brooklyn this year and really killed ourselves to get them online. They have labs, but they couldn't get internet access. One of them still doesn't have internet access. And we've been teaching there, just trying to make it work. So one is to increase the infrastructure at the labs. 92% of the people you'll see that were interviewed liked the trainers, but only 51% said they liked the labs that we were training in. So we need to improve that access. Two is we need to leverage those sites so that we can reach into people's homes and provide the kinds of at-home projects that we're doing with Jewish Omen Hospital, where we're using social work interns to go into the homes. And we're picking, the local partners are helping us pick people who need that. So we're identifying typically mobility impaired seniors. 20% of the people we serve now are mobility impaired already, but they're coming to the labs. So we can really reach a lot more people in the homes and target resources toward them through some kind of a voucher system or some kind of a way of reimbursing them. I know that Jewish Home, I believe, is actually paying out of pocket for the internet access for people that are participating in this. And FEGS has offered to pay for programs like this through partnerships with us. So, and taking advantage of the operating systems that we're building, but actually bringing them to scale. I mean, we're serving only, you know, 1,500 people a year with this. We could serve 10 times that many.
Thank you, Mr. Camber, and thanks as well to Sylvia Schwartz and Diane Sorzano. Thank you for your testimony today. Mr. Camber has already provided an effective introduction for our next speaker, Carnetta Clark of the Frederick E. Samuel Senior Center. Ms. Clark? No?
I just would like to say with the community, with the center, the instructor, he was awesome. He rebuilt the computers, which is 15 years old, but they work. And we have seniors that's like 85, and they learn a lot, how to check their medication, how to go on the internet. They learn a lot of things, how to shop. And I am proud to say that Councilwoman Inez Dickin, along with Oates, Tom, I bugged him for 2 years, and we got a computer. And I just want to thank everyone for being here. I wasn't intending to speak, but yeah, but I'm glad to be here.
Thank you very much, Ms. Clark.
Is there any questions? We had graduation of 36 people, and it was really an awesome graduation because that's the first center that's in Upper Manhattan, Harlem, by the AARP and Oates.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you for your testimony.